For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Okay, so put those phones down. And if you've got to call in, by all means, you can call in 844-320-4299, but we're really not going to be answering. Just due to the fact that the following three segments is another final wrap-up of my conversation with Ward Connerly, and I have so much to get through at this point in time that it's just futile to try to ring the numbers, and I really apologize. But when I'm doing these shows, I really want to be bringing in guests that can provide relevant content with what's kind of going on and give you their insights as to Republic Review and the perspective of how Republic Review can actually get us out of this ditch that we're caught in and how we can apply that. So anyway, if you're not going to be able to listen to the entire event, then I believe we're going to be rebroadcasted again on Saturday at 11 o'clock, just like last week. And so I know we're kind of messing up your schedule a little bit, but, you know, go Pirates, right? I mean, we want them to keep winning and get into some postseason play. Anyway, and at least they're not taking a knee, right? Isn't that important, too? At least they're not insulting us, our veterans, and all of the good, honorable people that have died to make individual liberty and individual sovereignty a standard here. So anyway, many parts of these shows refer to previous shows. So to stay abreast and to understand what I'm talking about regarding Platonism and those types of things, because I like using the word Platonism because it gives credit to the person who originally penned the concept of statism, which is Plato. Anyway, what you need to do is download these podcasts. That's on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So you can get these things for free and listen to your heart's content so that you can kind of start stitching together where our problems came from and what we need to do to start moving forward together in the Spokane County, in the Eastern Washington, within the state and within the Republic, how we move forward. Local announcements. Councilman Ed Pace for Spokane Valley, who is running for re-election, he will be hosting his town hall events this week and every week, and every Wednesday at 9 a.m. at McDonald's at University of Sprague is one of his town hall meetings. Another one is every Friday, 9 a.m. at Forza Coffee on Sullivan and 4th. And he also has one on Saturdays, 8 a.m. at Rosar's on University and Sprague. So if you didn't make it to the Republican Coffee Club last week where I spoke, it was good. It was very, very good. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of, you know, jaws dropping and eyes popping and people going, really? Anyway, so you missed out and it wasn't recorded, so it's not available for your purview or review, I should say. Anywho, this Friday is Larry Staley, and he's doing the Shroud of Turin. And on October 13th, there's going to be a round-robin forum where they're going to be talking maybe about the military-industrial complex. Who knows? They may be talking about Republic Review instead, because I think that they were, you know, sinking their teeth into the concept of actually the states applying their authority over the Constitution, as I've been telling you, and what that entails and what we can do. After the break, we will be airing, like I said, the second and final set of segments with my interview with Mr. Ward Connerly. And so next week, we're going to be airing an interview that I have done with Bob Zadek, who is a libertarian radio host who broadcasts out of San Francisco, Seattle, and Sacramento every Sunday at 8 a.m. So you could probably, when you listen to him and get some of the concepts that we talk about, you might want to download his podcast. It's pretty educational, and he doesn't do commercials or anything else. He's really a philanthropist throwing his ideas out there and creating a forum. He's been doing it for 10 years. So anyway, as I said last week, Ward Connerly is the founder of the American Civil Rights Institute, and he is a nonprofit organization aimed to educating the public about the need to move beyond race and specifically racial and gender preferences. So when we come back, we will have Mr. Connerly, and we'll be talking in detail about the fact that we really don't have a race problem, as we said last week, or as he was asserting last week. And it's more of a paradigm, and it is one of those divisive paradigms that the elite, the mainstream media, and those who want to form your opinions want to perpetuate this concept of racism. So we have another week and another weekend of unrest on the sidelines in the NFL. And I just want to cast this perspective, because I know this is really getting old, and most everybody that I'm seeing and communicating with, whether that be a mainstream media, Facebook, what have you, it seems like more and more people are just, you know, fed up. But I want you to put this into perspective. The NFL is a corporation, and each of these teams are independent corporations. You probably work for a corporation, and I'll bet you anything, your corporation has a professional decorum type policies on their books. And I'll bet you anything that if you went in and you did something that was a violation of their policies, then I will bet you that you would either be reprimanded or you'd probably be out looking for work somewhere else, and they would just let you go for cause due to the fact that you're violating a decorum, professional behavior type of policy. If you didn't know the history of the NFL, Pete Rozelle actually mandated that the players stand on the sidelines with their helmets under their arms, their left arms, and they all put their right hands on their chest and basically rendered respect towards the Star Spangled Banner and our emblem, our national emblem, or our flag. And so you need to understand that this NFL is a culture, and so something has happened to this culture that has allowed it to drift to become anti-American. Because I'm telling you, the NFL used to dictate player behavior, and it seems like they're becoming more and more enabling, because I think if you look, there's 44 that have been arrested and or indicted over, you know, domestic violence, shooting, you know, thuggery type of behavior. And in the old days, I believe you used to be kicked out or you were sanctioned. And it's more and more becoming a slap on the wrist instead of, you know, trying to maintain and clean the ranks, because they believe that they need, you know, a top-notch players, but they don't believe that they need to do the policing. A great case in point is Ben Roethlisberger, who was arrested and or wasn't charged, but he was associated to a crime down in the South. I don't know the details, but you can go look it up. And it was basically swept under the rug because these guys buy their way out. They're an elitist society, and they believe that they can throw their money around and be treated differently. And now they want to perpetuate this concept of, you know, set and determined justice instead of allowing the application of law. So we cannot allow this. And I know that the company I used to work for, if I started protesting some of their policies or some policies that are being rammed down corporate America, I would be out of a job, because they hold their line on their professional decorum and so forth. And so the NFL should be held to a professional decorum. You are the National Football League, and you should be rendering respect, period. You want to protest, you do that on your own time, and you get out there and you spend your own money in doing so. As you can tell, we're hitting the break at this point, so we will be right back after a word from our sponsors with Ward Connerly. So please stay tuned. You're going to love these last three segments. All right, folks, so we are back, and like I said before we went to this last break, that we had Ward Connerly in, and we're doing some follow-on segments because I want to try to help bring some maybe some insights and help people kind of get to this, I want to say, a point where we start unifying and quit allowing ourselves to be divided. And because I truly believe that old adage, and I'll say it again, that united we stand, divided we fall. And there are people, institutions, very nefarious people that want to maintain division in this nation so that we do not solve our problems. And I made in my last comment in closing out the last show that we've kind of had this tumor, cancer, we've had this problem from the very beginning. And in some respects, I look at, scars, I look at diseases and afflictions as character builders. And I think that, you know, a lot of times when a man touts a scar, as a matter of fact, it's funny when I see people, you know, how men react, hey, you want to see my scar? And they'll lift up their shirt and go, look at that one. But women don't do that. As a matter of fact, women are, you know, repulsed by scars and so forth because they're very concerned about that. And so we always look at, well, scars kind of add character to a man, but it adds a flaw to a woman. But I think to a nation, I still think it's the same way with men and a nation. They add character. At what point can we get to a point where we recognize that our problems don't have to continue, that's the character of this nation and how we've overcome that?
You know, your use of that analogy inspires me to think about my grandkids. Two of them, Justin and Alyssa, love Band-Aids. They have this fascination with Band-Aid, you know, and I'm sure that many parents have the same problem or the same issue. Kids run in and they need a Band-Aid for everything. And you say, you'll say, well, why do you need it? Oh, I'm hurt. So they rush in and get a Band-Aid, and you realize that it's in their head.
Right.
It's not, the problem is not a real one.
Sure.
That's where we are as a people with regard to race.
Sure.
The whole issue in Charlottesville was magnified 1,000 times beyond reality. If you look around our nation, we've just gotten rid of, as I see it, the first multiracial president, a guy who proclaims himself to be African-American. Whether we agree with his philosophy or not, and I don't, this was a crowning achievement for America to get beyond race. We squandered the opportunity largely because the man who promised a post-racial society didn't deliver on that.
No, as a matter of fact, he amplified.
He amplified it.
Right.
But nonetheless, the nation could go out and celebrate free at last,
right,
because we had delivered on one of our objectives,
right,
namely to get race so much out of the body politic.
And I found it ironic that when we finally got to that point, the one person that we would be given the opportunity, because there are, you know, I always ask myself when we look at candidates, is this the best? Is this really what we deserve? Don't we deserve the best? Can't we actually get really good candidates? And anyway, that's a completely different topic. I'm sorry.
And you go beyond the world of politics and you look at business. Who was sitting next to President Trump and who quit the job on one of his panels, the head of a large pharmaceutical company, a, quote, black man. You look at Oprah Winfrey and her vast fortune. You look at some of these athletes who are getting multi-million dollar contracts, amassing wealth beyond anything that most people will ever be able to imagine because there are so many zeros.
Right.
And Americans are marrying across lines of race more than ever. We are not a nation that has a race problem. It is magnified by some who want us to have a race problem, and they have succeeded in portraying it that way.
Right.
But we don't have a problem to the extent that it needs that big Band-Aid that I just talked about.
Right.
But we have been convinced that we do have a problem. The problem of race, the interaction between people of different melanin content, is largely it's a thing in some people's head. We have an underclass, a black underclass problem in many inner cities, but we have an underclass problem that goes beyond the question of race, and we need to focus on how do we get more people out of poverty, how do we deliver urban services to some of these neighborhoods that now lack it. That's something that we need to concern ourselves with. How do we extend the greatness of this nation to those neighborhoods? But race is not a problem that we need to think is this big looming or this big issue in American society.
Right. I have to inject because I actually had a conversation, a completely different topic, with a professor, a dean and a doctor in political science, because I asked him what would it take to heal this country, and he believed that education and these types of things. And I, you know, one of my last comments to him is I truly believe that it's not just education. I think that what we have to do is we have to recognize we have a lack of leadership, and we have to start challenging the leaders that we're picking and why we're allowing demagogues to rise to the top, because Aristotle in his book Politics talks about how demagogues will use whatever the issue of the du jour is, or the issue of the day, and you know, make their complaints and say, I'm going to lead in this, and they never deliver. What they do is they give us worse situations. And that's what we see in our presidents. Obama used demagoguery, and then he used division and so forth. And so I think what we really have a problem is how do we identify, and we need to start teaching people, not just education, we got to give them an education how to identify good leaders and what it really takes to start winning and having successful strategies so that these underclass groups within the urban and different parts of our society, because it's not just one particular race. It spans every single race. As a matter of fact, I believe the statistics are that the highest percentage of people on welfare today are whites. And so there's this, it's it's an American cultural problem that we lack this leadership. And so do you think that it's not just education, it is a leadership, and we need to learn as people?
Yes, you said it well. I'm not sure that the model of a president and the Congress as it is constituted is best structured to serve the population that we have.
I don't think they were designed to serve the population the way they're doing. And we've had this, I've kind of given you a little bit on my Republic review, but I would like to have you back to talk about that. But I don't think that's their job. It was never designed for them to manipulate and lead in that capacity.
I agree. If this were a company and I were king,
yeah,
I would not have one person who is, quote, running the whole country as we believe that the president is supposed to be doing. problems are too multifaceted, internationally and domestically, to believe that one person can do this. I think that we probably need, we probably need something, a different structure.
Well, good leadership actually identifies and delegates power so that they can start breaking up the roles of different decisions and so forth. We're going into a hard break here, and so we're going to be right back after this break with Ward Connerly to talk about this leadership. And so please stay tuned after we have a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Thank you, folks. Okay, we're back, and I still have the privilege of having Ward Connerly with us, and we were just talking about leadership. And so one of the things I know is that Washington was a great leader. We've had great leaders in this country, and as a matter of fact, some of the captains of industry that we have in this nation are great leaders. The problem is the people want to be king. They want to make all the decisions, and that basically leads to either monarchy or communism when you centralize powers and decisions. And as Jefferson talked about, us having a distributive power, distributive government, and political energies, that the decisions are supposed to be made at the furthest point from the capital as possible, so that the states actually have all these powers. And that's the design, so that we can have, you know, maybe a bad leader does come up in the ranks, but it can't affect the whole pot. You know, it only happens to Massachusetts, or right now California. And so, sorry. I don't want to go down that tangent. Anyway, the whole point in leadership is being able to identify where all your problems are and putting the best people within the disciplines of that, empowering them and letting them work. And that's how you create high performance teams as well. And so anyway,
well, I think that we need to fashion a system that removes the federal government and thus the president from all areas domestic, so that the president is only dealing with North Korea and things like that, keeping the country safe from foreign interests that want to do us harm. But as far as education and domestic matters, get the government out of that, therefore get the president out of that. And when we elect a president, we should be electing the person that can do the best job running the country as far as the safety of the country is concerned.
Right. What you just said has actually been said before, and it just gives me this.
I never pretended that it would be
unique. But actually, Madison said this in one of his Federalist Papers when they were basically explaining the intent of the federal government and so forth. And this is what he said, and this is Federalist Paper number 45. The powers delegated to the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain to the states are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised principally upon external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which last the power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the states will extend to all of the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concerns the lives, liberties, and properties of the people and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. See, he said it. He was actually saying that this was the design. And so what we're dealing with and what we're fighting is a government that is doing something that is well beyond the defined boundaries that the framers gave it. And so that is the evil and the insidiousness of our government.
And it is making our government more and more dysfunctional.
Yes.
Every day, because the government is trying to do things that are beyond its capability.
It wants to be a communist slash socialist government because it wants to be, it wants to give love to all of its citizens, because when the child comes in for the Band-Aid, it's just, they're still haven't reached their level of maturity and they need that little bit of love for whatever hurt them. And so a child learns this in the very first weeks, days of its life, that when it cries, this big thing comes to it, makes it feel better. And over time, it starts learning that it can start manipulating this big thing, that if it cries for no reason at all, that big thing's going to come and check and see and do all sorts of things. And that's how it starts associating love. And so in context of your grandchildren, when they come in, it's just, that's how they've learned to associate love, to feel, to help them feel better from something that just happened to them.
You got it.
And so our federal government is doing the exact same thing. They want to love us, but that's not their job. They were never designed to be able to do that. That's the state's job, to be able to try to mollycoddle if we want to. And the empirical data that is out there from the centuries and centuries, the millennia of societies that we have going back to the cradle of civilization, ancient Greece, because we have all this documentation that proves that every time government tries to create this big family order, every time they try to do these types of things, it is always the beginning of the downfall.
Until we recognize this stark reality of the fact that our government will become increasingly dysfunctional, incapable of doing all that we expect of it,
right?
Our problems will worsen.
Yes.
Because there is no one individual who can assemble a team to solve all these problems and empower that team to do everything that is there for that government to do.
Right.
People are expecting too much.
Right. I believe the real solution is removing government. Because when you remove government, it allows the people at the local level to figure out what the real problem is, and then they can address that, and then they can actually get to work at fixing it and moving on to whatever the next problem is that they discover that government gave them.
And so the question is, how do we do that? Because I would submit that we probably will not succeed in removing government from all facets of our life.
Well, so there is this necessary evil that Adam Smith talks about in The Wealth of Nations, that we have to have government for certain things. And so the ingeniousness of what the framers did in creating this multi-tiered system. And I talk about this in my books, and I talk about this in my presentations. I don't get into this in my executive summary that I've asked you, and hopefully you'll read in the near future, and we can have you back on. But we have a system that has created a multi-level republic. Each state is supposed to be Republican in form, to where they distribute power down to the counties. And it's because the counties are the closest level of government. And the reason being is that people should be able to engage in their government within a day's travel. And back in the framers' days, that was the size of a county. How long did it take to travel for a day to be able to go vote and then go home for your day travel, so that people could engage in government? So there was a physical layout designed for that. And so when we look at this multi-republic, we have to surrender certain powers and sovereignties to our county and to our state. And so the framers recognized that those powers needed to remain out there in the states, and they only surrendered their foreign relations, national security, those types of things, to be able to give us this freedom and liberty at this great level with this complicated, it's not that complicated, folks, in allowing the federal government to be outward and outward facing, and allowing the states to kind of take care of everything else. And so we have to kind of surrender to the states some of our sovereignties. And then when they start making mistakes, what do? Well, we have to vote them out. We have to undo all of these things. And hopefully what they did wasn't a real constitutional amendment, but I believe we have the perfect plan. I think, and I'll even say this, that the Constitution was divinely inspired by our Lord and Savior, and all the framers basically attested to this, and they never denied this, that what they were given in inspiration during that convention was literally divine providence. And, you know, that was the very first thing when Congress formed, and as we're coming up on Constitution Day, the very first thing that that Congress asked President Washington to do was to create a proclamation of thanksgiving that the nation would, you know, each year recognize and give thanks, not for the pilgrims and not for the Indians and the bad experiment of socialism that caused that. The proclamation of thanksgiving was to recognize the benevolence of our Lord and Savior in granting us our liberties and in giving us this Constitution. And I ask people all the time, please, for Thanksgiving, don't buy into the secular garbage. Go read that first proclamation and understand what we're supposed to be thankful for. I believe it's a sacred holiday, and it's relevant to this state. Folks, we've got a hard break. We're going to be right back, and I'm going to ask Mr. Connerly to help engage in this healing process. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so we're back, and this is going to be our last segment of the show. And as we were ending the last break, I went into a diatribe regarding the fact that I think we have the perfect experiment, and in context to your question, that we have to get government out. I think that once you read my executive summary on Republic Review, you'll understand that it actually is the process of getting the federal government out of the state's knickers and getting them back to the things that they were designed to do. The question then is, and I definitely, once you read it, let me know, and I will have you back in, and we can talk more about this. I think you may be equally excited as I am about it. I'm a salesperson. What do you think? Anyway, I know that we have a hard row to hoe, and our biggest threat and our biggest problem is going to be our counties and state government. And I say that because the federal dollar is tied to so many things that the states, in some of these really progressive states, it's going to be very hard for them to go through this cultural change. And so what are your thoughts on what we need to do? I think that it goes back to leadership, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What do you think?
Well, I think that we will have many problems.
Yeah.
The universities, the academic world, the diversity world, is going to be a challenge as well, because they depend heavily on the government dollar, and they have become a giant in our culture. In addition to the problems that we see, there are problems that we don't see, which are driven by the academic world. So there are going to be a lot of problems for us to deal with as we try to reconstruct the nation from the bottom up, if you will. But we are at a defining moment in the country. Unlike many, I am pleased with the injection of Donald J. Trump into this whole equation, because it enables us to see a lot of problems that we otherwise wouldn't see. Just imagine, if you will, that Hillary Clinton had been elected president of the United States. Life would go on from Obama to Clinton seamlessly, and we would never see many of the problems that are there.
Right.
So I am delighted with the involvement of Trump. It's almost like the good Lord said, okay, I'm going to give you this guy, and you can see what problems you have. And unlike many, I see it as a mixed blessing. Trump is a good leader, and he may not be the best in many other respects, but in terms of leadership ability and running the government from the standpoint of what I see as a primary responsibility, which is foreign affairs, I don't think that we could do any better than President Trump.
Right.
So I think that this is a unique opportunity for the nation to reconsider what needs to be done. Now, with respect to this issue of race and how we deal with that, it's important that we realize that we don't have a huge race problem. We really don't. The nation has done a magnificent job in addressing this issue over the years, and we have made a lot of progress. The problem is that we've allowed those with foul motives to take control, the Black Lives Matter, the race advocates. They have taken control of the vehicle. They're behind the wheel, and they're driving us, and they're going to drive us over a cliff unless we realize the harm that they can do and kick them out of the driver's seat and resume control of the car.
Well, let me inject this into the metaphor. I believe we're still in the driver's seat, but we're just allowing them to grab a hold of the steering wheel. They're reaching down and maybe hitting the pedals, the brakes, what have you. But we can easily take this back. We sometimes allow other people, and I do this with my wife a lot because, you know, when something has to be done in a household, somebody has to have the power to make the decisions. 9 times out of 10, the biggest mistake people make is when they try to share the decision process equally, because then what happens is, well, I wanted to do it this way. So what we have to do is kind of look at, we got to get this work done on the house. We need a contractor to come in and do work. I'm going to empower you to make all the decisions, and I have to support you in that, because you can't have two people driving the vehicle at the same time, because it causes problems. And I think that's in the metaphor of the driving. I think that we actually have a lot of people that are trying to drive this vehicle when we still can take it back. We're still in the position of control.
We could spend days arguing that point
okay,
as to whether we really can resume control.
Okay.
Because once you give something away, it's awfully hard to get it back.
Oh, sure.
Without grabbing the driver by the neck and hauling his tail out of there.
Right. It's like Road Warrior, Mad Max, when people are trying to steal control of the vehicle and you're fighting all these guys. I understand. I see the metaphor in my head.
Yeah. But the important thing to remember is that we should not allow those who are trying to run this issue believe that, boy, this is the biggest issue we'll ever face. It is beyond our capability, because I don't think that it is the issue anymore. I think that we are allowing people with bad motives to puff up the problem for their own purposes. Just imagine that Charlottesville never happened. Life would be going on, and life is going on. And that issue of that one day is receding every day into the background.
Right.
And we're realizing that it really doesn't define the nation.
No, but what has happened, because they are grabbing more controls of the car and so forth, what is happening is now they want to dismantle our history. Now they want to basically start purifying to create a dumber society so they can control us better.
And you got it. You got it.
And so we have to start recognizing, don't believe this dialogue. We can't make the same mistakes that other societies have made to allowing people. As a matter of fact, right after World War II, every German was marched through Auschwitz, and every German saw, you know, the piles of bones and so forth, and the devastation that they did to a culture and people. And so every German kind of had to live with that nightmare. They don't have those bones and anything anymore to drag people through, but you still have to remember, and you have to have a reality check of your history and understanding what it took to overcome that. And so I understand that things go away on their own accord, but when we have the reactionaries that are going on and doing this, they have the nefarious motives and machinations of doing something even worse. And I'll leave the last 2 minutes to you on that.
We have a great nation, and we have all in our various ways have made it what it is.
Yes.
The journey to completion is probably longer than the journey that got us to where we are now. But we can't get there until we realize what we need to do. There needs to be a national consensus about what our objective is. Mine is to get race out of the system, because I think that it is standing in the way of so many things, and it's becoming a, it's becoming the barrier that people who look like me, if you will, have had to deal with for so many years. And now that that barrier is removed, I don't want to see it reimposed on our society. But we should not be deluded into thinking that America has a huge race problem. We've got a lot of problems, but race is probably pretty low on the totem pole of our problems, in my view.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, I believe our number one priority has to be getting the federal government back into its designed job and back into what it needs to be focused on, as we were talking about and alluding to. And so I want to have you back so that we can talk about that, because I think that is the biggest hurdle that we have. And so thank you very much, folks, for tuning in. And in the near future, we will have Mr. Connerly back. And please stay tuned to the next show so that you can continue to learn what it's going to take to reclaim the Republic. Thank you again, and God bless.